रामाय राम भद्राय रामचंद्राय वेदसे रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीताय पते नमः। अयोध्या कांड चैप्टर नंबर 1। दशरथ रिजॉल्व्ड टू क्राउन रामा द किंग ऑफ अयोध्या। द रेसिटेशन बिगिंस नाउ। शत्रुघ्न द फॉल्टलेस, शत्रुघ्न द प्राउड विक्टर ओवर आवर स्लीपलेस फोज, डिजायर एंड हेट, ग्रीड एंड एनवी, pride and ignorance, was affectionately invited by Bharata to be his companion during his visit to his uncle Yudhajit. The lord of the Kekiyas loved his nephew even as his own son and entertained him with presents of noble steeds, ornaments, dresses, banquets. Yet Bharata stayed there only because his beloved Shatrughna was with him. Their life was a happy one at the court of King Ashwapati with everything that the heart could desire, but their reverend sire was ever in the thoughts of the valiant princess. The snows of 60,000 winters crown our father's head even as the lofty Himalaya. It is preposterous for anyone to expect that he could continue to bear on his mighty shoulders the huge burden of government. The gods grant that he crown our Rama king. Our place is at his feet to serve him in all affection and reverence. We but waste the precious moments here. All along, the aged Dashrata, whose fame and splendor grew and grew in that he was the thrice fortunate parent of the noble princes, yearned for their bright presence. It is grievous enough to be parted away from my Bharata and Shatrughna, who are attached to one another, even as Indra and Varuna. All my riches, all my power, all my splendor are to me as naught when the children of my heart are not where my aged eyes can fondly rest upon them. He looked upon his sons as four arms sprung from his body. In his loving heart, they found an equal place. But even as a great demiurge, Brahma, among the countless myriads who adore him, Rama drew Dashrata towards him by the might of his countless perfections. For was he not Vishnu, the Lord of eternity? Come down on earth as Rama in response to the prayers of the gods who desired at his hands the destruction of Ravana, whose pride and haughtiness knew no bounds. Aditi, the happy mother of Indra, shone not with a brighter radiance than Kaushalya, the thrice blessed mother of Rama, the lord of boundless light. To none other than on earth or in the heavens was it given to be the mother of such a son. He was a dream of beauty, the soul of valor, from envy free and like unto his father in character, conduct and tastes. Soft and gentle was ever his speech, the true index of a serene heart. No one was known to speak to him harshly, and even if it was so, Rama never spake back, never was provoked to taunts. The lightest act of service from any was indelibly graven upon his heart, which magnified it beyond count and rejoiced beyond measure. Neither the lapse of time nor the question of motive affected him in the least. But the evil that others did him, though past all count, never left the slightest trace on his memory. For was he not the soul of the universe, the lord of matter and its illusions? He ever sought the company and conversation of good men grown gray in years, wisdom and virtue, even in the intervals snatched from martial exercises. His thoughts were ever engaged in the solution of the problem of conferring the highest happiness possible on humanity. Pleasant of speech, he was ever the first to address others, however low they may be in the scale of social life. Of boundless might to destroy the foes that threatened his friends and dependents, yet his heart was ever lowly and meek. He would never soil his lips with an untruth, even with a harmless tale. He ever advanced to meet the elders and reverenced them duly. Every one of his subjects was the object of his especial care and affection, and they returned his love with a full measure and overflowing. His heart ever went out in pity and compassion to all alike, and the sight of others' misery was too much for him to bear. Anger was sternly kept under control by him. Men of profound wisdom and saintly lives were ever sure of his respect and veneration. The needy and the afflicted found a warm corner in his heart. He knew the mysteries of law and duty in general and in detail. He ever set before himself as a law of life to offer refuge to all beings that should need it. He never coveted for the possessions of others. He held it as an article of faith that mercy, compassion, protection to those seek it, and stern repression of the wicked and the evil-minded were the prime duties of his order. It was the surest way to win bright fame on earth and the brighter worlds of the gods hereafter. Master of every art and science, yet he never wasted the precious moments of his life in idle games of pastimes. His soul turned away with disgust from all idle and coarse talk that lured men into the paths of evil. Like unto Brihaspati, the priest and counselor of Indra, he was unrivaled in weighty speech and quick reply. Rejoicing in the possession of perfect health and peace of heart, he was a lovely youth, strong and hardy. Men hung on the honeyed words that flowed from his lips. He well knew the right place and right time and conditions for the study of the sacred law. He read at a glance into the innermost depths of the hearts of the others, their strengths, their weaknesses, their merits and their faults. Evil or offense to him, treachery or spite, but evoked from his heart mighty currents of compassion and sympathy. Prince Rama, dowered with every excellence and perfection, was dearer to his subjects than their very breath of their nostrils. He sat at the feet of the best and ablest masters and reverently learned from them the secrets of every art and science. He kept the prescribed vows and observances and duly obtained permission from his teachers to close the student's career and take upon himself the heavier responsibilities of a householder. He was well versed in Vedic lore, exoteric and esoteric. He excelled his famed father in his proficiency in the arts of war and bowmanship. He gloried in his proud and spotless lineage. He was the center of everything, good and beneficent, faultlessly perfect, and of firm and earnest faith in the higher wisdom. Of unruffled heart and unclouded intellect, he was ever true of speech, even under the most trying circumstances. He was straight of heart, speech, and act. Saintly Brahmanas, grown gray in years of wisdom, guided his early steps on a narrow path of right and duty. The pursuit of duty, gain and pleasure, dharma, artha and kama had its claims and bounds well defined within him. With a phenomenal keenness of memory, he possessed infinite resource and tact and was expert in the discharge of civil business. Respectful to all, he was yet unfathomable of purpose. His face or acts betrayed not in the least the counsel of his heart. His counselors were the cleverest of the age. Neither his wrath nor his favor went for nothing. He knew full well when to give profusely and when to acquire wealth by just means. His heart went out in the adoration of the gods and the teachers. His knowledge of the eternal verities and Vedas was clear and profound. He kept away from the company of the foolish and the ways of the evil-hearted. Softly, slow, and deliberate of speech, he was ever diligent in the pursuit of knowledge and keen to pierce to the hearts of the sciences. No one was more aware of his faults and failings or of the weakness of the kingdom and his enemies. The Vedas, Vedangas, and the 32 sciences and the 64 arts were mastered by him in detail. He was intimate with the final truths and conclusions on all subjects of human interest. He read at a glance the fine and delicate distinctions between man and man. He was ever assiduous in attracting to himself friends, refugees, and good men, as also in fulfilling the fondest wishes of their heart in consonance with the laws of kingly polity. He knew with wonderful precision when to lay the heavy hand of punishment upon a man and where. The busy bees extract not sweet honey from blossoming flowers more delicately and without disturbing them than he filled the royal coffers with the wealth ungrudgingly offered by his loving subjects. He followed the traditions of royalty in spending a quarter or half or three quarters of his income, but never more. He was far and away the most learned in religious lore and likewise in the lay literature of his age in Sanskrit, Prakrit and other dialects. Pleasure found in him a warm follower, but with strict regard to the demands of duty and gain, dharma and artha. He put his heart into everything that he did. He was proficient in painting, vocal and instrumental music, sculpture, poetry, and other departments of the fine arts. Works of charity and measures that would enhance his fame had the first claim upon his wealth. His friends, relations, and dependents came next. A third portion was set apart as reproductive capital, and what remained he spent upon himself. None excelled him in the art of training and guiding horses, elephants, and camels. He knew to perfection the innermost mysteries of the signs of the bow or Dhanurveda. The foremost warriors of his time, the Atirathas, looked upon him as their master. He placed himself at the head of his troops, advanced fearlessly upon the embattled ranks of the enemy, and pierced into the intricate impenetrable vyuhas or arrays and scattered them like chaff before the wind, all the while warding off danger and disaster from his own men. He was expert in marshalling soldiers into various and wonderful arrays. Men, nor gods, nor asuras, ever dreamt of standing up to him, even in their wildest moments of fury. He put away from himself envy, ill-temper, pride, and calumny. It was foreign to his nature to be unkind or haughty to the meanest object in creation. The wheel of time that rolls on ceaselessly with its flashing spokes of the three gunas, the wheel of time that rolls on ceaselessly with its flashing spokes of the three gunas, never reflected its varying motions in his heart, which ever remained calm, serene, and pure. Meek and patient, even as the earth, Rama was the dearest object to the three worlds, so bright shone he in his excellences. Profoundly wise as Brihaspati, valiant as Indra, he drew to himself the hearts of his people and of King Dashrata, from whose loins he sprung. The glory of his perfections illumined the utmost corners of the world, even as the countless rays of the noonday sun. Steadfast in his resolve to protect those that took refuge in him, of unfailing might and valor, happy in the possession of everything that the heart could ever desire, he occupied the foremost place in the thoughts of the people, who eagerly looked forward to the day when he would reign over them. Dasharatha, the terror of his foes, looked with a fond eye on the darling of his heart and said to himself, "Long beyond mortal count have been my days upon earth, and I have drunk the cup of life even to the lees. What should I desire now more than to see my beloved Rama of matchless excellence reign in my stead? May the winged hours haste forward the day when I would see the brows of my Rama encircled with the crown of the Ikshvakus. For he is ever intent upon making the rich men of my kingdom richer. He is ready to help and appraise those whom the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune have struck low. My people love him more than myself, even as the welcome clouds that pour their cool waters over the parched lips of the burning earth. Like unto Yama, the god of death, and Indra, the ruler of the shining ones in might, like unto Brihaspati in knowledge and wisdom, strong of heart and unshaken even as the Himalayas, it is but meet that he stands high above myself in worth and in the people's esteem. It behooves me to close my long life by giving myself the pleasure to see my son crowned as king, and then I might, with a contented heart, take my place in the mansion of the blessed. He next took counsel with his ministers and advisors, who were loud in singing their praises of Rama as a living embodiment of countless excellences rare in other kings, and he decided to resign his kingdom in favor of his eldest son. He urged upon his counselors the necessity of hastening the happy day. The snows of age weighed very heavily upon him. The ominous portents in the heavens, in the middle world, and on earth warned him of coming calamity and mishap. His subjects, and himself more than they, lived in the light of Rama's presence and forgot their griefs and sorrows therein. Verily, the moment was approaching when the world was to enter upon a new era of peace and prosperity. All the more reason why he should be quick in bringing it about. Fleet messengers were dispatched in hot haste to invite the kings under him, the leaders of men in town and villages, his friends near and far, as well as those who ever had his welfare at heart. No word did he send to the king of the Kekiyas or to Janaka. They lived far away and might as well hear the happy news later on. They readily responded to his invitation and were right royally entertained, as became their rank and worth. Like Brahma the ancient in his high world, King Dasharatha sat on his royal throne in all pomp and splendor and gave audience to those who waited to pay him their respects. They entered the vast hall and ranged themselves therein according to the rules of precedence. All eyes were respectfully turned upon Dasharatha, kings, citizens, provincials, and friends, who stood high in the love and esteem of the aged monarch, and now encircled him as the high gods press around their king Indra. Mangalam Kaushalendraya Mahaniya Gunabhye Chakravarti Dhanurjaya Sarva Bhaumaya Mangalam.